Next up this morning, Sinn Féin should take their seats at Westminster to help secure a soft Brexit for the UK. That comes from the SDLP. They have called on Sinn Féin to head into Westminster to back Labour's new position. This, of course, Labour Party and their dramatic shift in policy over the weekend. It now supports full participation in the single market and customs union during a lengthy transitional period before leaving the EU. Now, Brexit talks are due to take place in Brussels later today. The Irish border is expected once again to be on the agenda. How high is a question I will ask our economics and business editor, John Campbell, who is in Brussels. Good morning, John.
Hello.
We like to think that we're quite important here and we're on everyone's agenda, but how high will the border issue be in these talks?
Well, the way the Northern Ireland issues work in these talks, it's only discussed by the two most senior negotiators on each side. So there's Zavina Vyand on the EU side and Ollie Robbins on the UK side. And they're due to be meeting today to discuss what they call a dialogue on Northern Ireland issues. We should just be clear what is and isn't going to be on the agenda there. The EU is very clear that they, at this stage, are not going to be having any discussions at all about trade deals or the operation of customs across the border. So the nitty-gritty of what will actually be happening at the border, how trade will happen across the border after Brexit, that is absolutely not on the agenda at this stage. And the EU's chief negotiator has said it isn't likely to be on the agenda until next year. What they're discussing at this stage, I suppose, is really issues around the Good Friday Agreement and how the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement, including the cross-border bodies, will continue to work after Brexit. And they're also discussing the common travel area, and that's the arrangement which allows passport-free travel north and south and also between the UK and Ireland. During the last round of talks, the EU said they hadn't got enough detail on any of those issues yet, but since then the UK has published a position paper which starts to advance some of its thinking. So that's the area that we're in at the moment.
We've heard people talk, John, about the separation issue. Simon Coveney, the Irish Foreign Affairs Minister, last night, he was talking about the need for the UK to stay in the single market. How realistic is he being?
Well, I think things have got a little bit more interesting, I suppose, with that change in Labour policy. So you had a Labour policy on Brexit, which you could say was ambiguous, or you could perhaps say was fairly chaotic. But now, really, what Labour are saying is, yes, we're going to be leaving the EU in about 18 months, but there should be a transitional phase where, although we've legally left the EU, we should continue to follow most of its rules, we should stay in the single market, and we should form a new customs union. So there would be pretty much a status quo for an interim period. And that is a view I think a lot of people in business would support. They don't want to see a cliff edge where trading arrangements suddenly become much tougher overnight. There's also, I think, in parts of the Conservative Party, very clearly a wish for that sort of transitional arrangement. So it's possible that you could find a way for the UK to remain a participant in the single market in the short to medium term. Ultimately, what the Irish government would like is for the UK to commit to remaining both in the single market and a customs union pretty much in perpetuity. That's, I think, the best outcome that the Irish government sees in this situation, and that is a line that they are continuing to push.
We're going to hear from the SDLP and Sinn Féin in a moment, but John, the stage is somewhat set for some big arguments with the government on the 7th of September when the EU bill returns to the Commons for its second reading. So talk me through, as you see it, the relevance of Sinn Féin and the SDLP when it comes to influencing that alongside the likes of the SNP, the Labour Party, and of course the pro-EU Tories.
Yeah, it's a numbers game, effectively. So we now have this position where we would have the Labour Party very keen to back, as policy, this idea of maintaining core participation in the single market for an interim period and all that comes with that, including continuing free movement for this interim period. Now, you wouldn't necessarily have every Labour MP wanting to back that policy, because there are Brexiteers who, like Kate Hoey, for example, who may choose to vote against. Certainly, I think Labour could count on the support of the Lib Dems, the Scottish Nationalists and Plaid Cymru to support a soft Brexit. And then there's the issue of what would happen with Conservative rebels. Would there be enough to actually make that policy? So you would probably need about 10 or 12 Tory rebels to be required to defeat the government on any vote. So you can see that the numbers would be very tight. Now, one other issue, though, is this could all become academic, because what we're expecting over the next few weeks is a major speech from the Prime Minister on Brexit. So if at that speech she says, yes, we're going to need a transitional deal and this is how it's going to work, then, you know, the whole issue of will there be, you know, a Conservative rebellion, does Labour have the numbers and all the rest of it, becomes academic if that becomes the policy. But clearly the numbers are very tight. So you'd need 10 to 12 Conservative rebels, most likely. But the issue I would also raise is, if Jeremy Corbyn is pushing this very clearly as his policy, will you get any Conservative rebels at all? Or would they see that defeating the Prime Minister on this issue could potentially lead to her having to resign, and then you're into a whole election situation, and the Conservatives do not want an election at the moment? So fine numbers and fine judgments to be made.
OK, John Campbell, thank you very much. That's our economics and business editor, John Campbell, in Brussels. The SDLP MLA, Claire Hannah, and the Sinn Féin's John O'Dowd are with me. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Claire, we'll start off with yourself. The SDLP, they're calling for Sinn Féin to take their seats. Why?
Well, I think, yeah, Colin's saying that we need to think outside the box here. We need to look at how we stop Brexit. It is, we know, the biggest risk to our economic and social and political well-being, and all of the parties who are opposed to it, particularly those of us who campaigned on a platform of doing everything we can to oppose it, have to have a plan. It's not good enough to just, you know, wave placards and stuff about Brexit. We actually have to have a plan. And Labour's move, which is based on the reality of the fact that hard Brexit is undeliverable, has made votes on a soft Brexit very winnable. We know Theresa May has to go to Parliament, even on straight party lines. The numbers are tight, but we know that there are Tory MPs committed to rebel on this, and even short of the big vote on actually a Brexit deal and on
yes.
the nature of it, the repeal bill is going through, and that is going to have very major impact for all.
But of course, Claire, you know, Claire, though, there will be people, the sceptics will be saying, Claire Hannah, the SDLP, you're calling for this, calling on Sinn Féin to take their seats because you, the SDLP, lost all yours and therefore have no say in Westminster.
But we're saying we need, Northern Ireland needs to say, Scotland and Wales, and we're working. I mean, I'm in very close contact with Scottish and Welsh and English MPs on issues around the repeal bill. But whenever they're trying to put protections in for Scotland and Wales, who's going to move the amendments to protect the Good Friday Agreement? And it's not just, you know, rights relating to the agreement and what it entails. It's things like environmental rights. It's things like workers' rights, and just making sure that all of those powers aren't stripped out. And I appreciate that Sinn Féin campaigned on a platform of being abstentionist, but they have made, when you know, time required, big U-turns before. Remember, they used to say they would never sit in the Dáil. They used to say they would never sit in Stormont. They used to say they would never sit on policing boards. In fact, they campaigned against Europe in 9 referenda in the South.
Well, so let's hear from them.
When it requires, they can do big U-turns.
John O'Dowd,
really a big threat.
You need to just take your seats, apparently.
Well, I'm actually surprised to be debating this again 8 short weeks after an election where the electorate debated this at length, and it was the main SDLP platform during that election campaign. All their spokespersons in all the TV debates and radio debates and public platforms argued very strongly that MPs need to take their seats in Westminster. The SDLP got 12% of the vote, lost all their MPs. Sinn Féin got 30% of the vote and increased their mandate by 3 MPs to 7 MPs. So the SDLP lost the argument among the Nationalist and Republican voters, and I think they should accept that. There will be absolutely no possibility of Sinn Féin reversing its position in relation to Westminster. It is absurd even for a person who claims to be a Democrat to come on the airwaves and say, forget about what you told the electorate, forget about the vote. Just do a U-turn.
Okay, Claire, you want to respond to that.
Abandon your manifesto position and do what the SDLP wants you to do, even though the vast majority of the electorate rejected that SDLP position.
Claire?
Well, a number of things. The vast majority of the electorate, over 70% of them, voted for the concept of attending Westminster. The vast majority of the electorate voted to fight Brexit.
But let's talk about, though, Claire, respond to it in terms of Sinn Féin and in terms of what they stood for at the last election.
But Sinn Féin's campaign on that were based on two premises. They said, well, three, the kind of principle. But like I say, they've had big, massive principles like no decommissioning and stuff that they did U-turn on. But
correct in that point there. No, hold on, one second.
One at a time. Claire, you finish and John, I'll bring you back in.
No, I think it's a very important point. Sinn Féin did not decommission anything because they had nothing to decommission.
Okay. But you campaigned in the Westminster election, and in fairness, the previous one, on the fact that Northern Ireland MPs couldn't possibly have any impact on the electoral arithmetic. That is demonstrably proven to be wrong. You also campaigned on the fact that, you know, we decide here, and that has also been proved wrong because England's Brexit votes are pulling us out and we don't have an assembly to ballast that. So those two kind of key platforms in the campaign that our MPs couldn't possibly affect the numbers is wrong, and that we have our own mechanisms here to fight against Brexit, and that is wrong. So my macro point is that you can do U-turns when it suits, and Brexit is the biggest problem. And
okay.
Those two issues about...
Well, let's get John back in there. So, John O'Dowd, you have U-turned before. Why not this time?
Well, we haven't U-turned before. We have had policies...
Did you not say you would never sit in Stormont? Did you not say you would never sit in policing boards? You do those things. Did you not campaign against Europe in 9 referenda in the South? You U-turned on that.
Well,
there's no shame in it.
Well, let him respond, John.
No, so I'm just wondering, am I going to get a chance to respond?
Have you U-turned on policies before?
There has been no U-turn. We have had policy discussions, debates, our dashes, where we have discussed policy and we've made policy changes where we believe it will advance the political project, and it's the correct thing to do. So there has been changes in policies, as is all political parties.
Sure.
Will at times change policies. Is there going to be a change to the Westminster policy 8 weeks after Westminster or after the Westminster election? No, there is not.
I think the point, though, John, that Claire is trying to make is that you have changed your mind, your policies in the past before. So given the fact that you and your party and the stance that you have towards Brexit, why would it not apply in this case?
Because we have made our position very clear. 30% of the Nationalist Republican electorate endorsed, or 30% of the electorate endorsed Sinn Féin. 12% endorsed the SDLP. But let's look at the politics of this. Would our MPs made a difference in terms of who would be Prime Minister in Britain? No, they wouldn't have, because we wouldn't have been voting for the Conservatives, and there simply wasn't enough votes to put Jeremy Corbyn in power. So let me finish my point. Claire Hannah's had a sufficient time to put points across. Let me finish my point. So there wouldn't have been enough votes to change the arithmetic in Westminster. If the Assembly's not up in place, the Executive's not up in place, so we need a voice. I attended every one but one of the joint ministerial council meetings, including the Scottish government, the Welsh government, the British government, and the Northern Executive. And it was the most farcical meetings I ever attended in my life. And it's quite clear from the British government's position that they have ignored a working Welsh executive and a working Scottish executive. So please,
okay.
No one's going to convince.
Well, John, let me ask you this. What do you say, John, then, to people that will talk about the SNP, about Labour's position, and about some of the Tory pro-EU people, and therefore when you add to those numbers, there is a potential that you could have influence?
Well, again, I'm not a member of the SNP or any of those other political parties.
I know, but we're talking numbers here.
Yes, but we have made it very, very clear. We will not be taking our seats in Westminster.
I understand that, John, but do you understand the point that I'm trying to make?
You don't understand it. Apparently, you don't understand it, because you keep asking me the same question, and I keep giving you the same answer. Sinn Féin MPs will not be taking their seats in Westminster. I'm not sure what part of that people do
okay.
not understand.
Claire, you want back in there.
Yeah, I mean...
But I do know 30% of the electorate understood it.
Okay, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Plaid and the SNP, both of whom are nationalist parties and who believe in independence, but take their seats. I appreciate that, and I'm not saying otherwise, and I'm not saying that Sinn Féin, I appreciate they campaigned on that, but I am also making the point that nothing is set in stone, and they have done very major changes in policy, and I don't see why, if it can prevent a hard border, and many other things, by the way, many other policies become winnable when their seats come into play. But I suppose if we can change the question, what are they going to do then? What are all of us going to do to fight Brexit, given that we don't, you know, we're abstentionists in London. I appreciate the SDLP are abstentionists because the electorate told us that. We lost our seats. We're all abstentionists in Belfast now. Yes, in Dublin, and Dublin is pro-special status, but even Sinn Féin's four MEPs in Europe, we were told there was going to be a big diplomatic offensive, and their grouping put forward an amendment on special status that fell. Sinn Féin didn't even vote for the amendment on special status in the European Parliament. So I suppose I'm going to put it back, fair enough, if you're not going to take your seats. What are you going to do to give effect to the big fight Brexit campaign you have? And I appreciate that. You've got an enormous mandate, and fair play to you. But what are you going to do with it to help prevent a catastrophic Brexit? Apart from lots of posters and all that there, and that's good. But how?
OK, let him respond. John, go ahead.
OK, I'm happy to respond, and then we'll find out what the SDLP are doing to oppose Brexit. I think it'll be a more healthy debate in that context. Well, let's look firstly at Europe and what happened in Europe in the European Parliament. Throughout the election campaign, the SDLP said that Sinn Féin's voice in the European Parliament was ineffective. We were involved in a group that no one paid attention to. But look at the European Parliament's negotiating position. And up there at the top of the negotiating position is this point, that they will protect the Good Friday Agreement in all its parts. And why is that wording in the European Parliament's negotiating position? Because Sinn Féin, through its group in the European Parliament, put it there.
So the Dublin
government. You want the point? You want to hear what my position is?
The government to protect that's ridiculous. It came from across Europe, including. I mean, Europe celebrates massively the peace project here. I don't think it was just Sinn Féin's idea to protect the Good Friday Agreement.
You want to hear what we're doing?
Okay. Yeah.
You're going to have to listen a wee bit.
Sure. Okay. And it didn't invent protecting the peace process.
But including that wording. And the European Parliament's negotiating position came from Sinn Féin. In terms of what's happening, I mean, not abstentionists in Dublin. We have 30 EDs.
Okay, John, but if you can get to the point in terms of answering Claire's question, so what are Sinn Féin doing to try and aim towards a softer Brexit?
If somebody would let me talk, then I will answer the question.
Well, you already tried to answer it, and then Claire's come back and contradicted that, so please, if you can get to the next point.
Well, with respect to you, I'm not trying to answer the question. I'm answering the question. And if you would stop interrupting me, and Claire would stop.
I think you'll find, John, just to be totally fair, I have not interrupted you in the last 5 minutes, but if you could get your point, that'll be great. I'm just wary of the time.
Have you stopped interrupting me now? Okay, now let's continue.
John, it's not a monologue.
There you go again. We have 30 Sinn Féin TDs and senators in the Dáil, and the Irish Parliament, the Dáil, adopted a Sinn Féin motion calling for special status for the island of Ireland. In negotiations, we have seen a shift in position from the Dublin government. Now, I think some of that is to do with domestic politics in the 26 counties, but it's also, I would hope, a recognition of the motion passed in the Dáil by the majority of TDs calling for and supporting the Sinn Féin motion for special status in the North. So there's two examples of where Sinn Féin have set the political agenda in the institutions which have an influence on Brexit.
Well, I mean, for example, the European Parliament debated a resolution by Sinn Féin's grouping on special status that I would say it was a very premature resolution because the European negotiators weren't going to tie their hands. But that motion failed disastrously. I think it only got 30 votes. Sinn Féin didn't even support it themselves. So you have all this influence in this group who put forward a premature, doomed motion on special status. Why didn't you even support it yourself, though, to at least give it weight and give it effect?
It was a technical amendment to a group of amendments that was going through, which has no impact on the European Parliament's position in relation to negotiation strategy. And the SDLP grouping, who the SDLP still have allegiance to and alliance to in the European Parliament, didn't vote for it either.
Yeah, because it was premature and it was doomed. But I mean, if Sinn Féin had so much influence and your group, and you've influenced them so much, I mean, I think it would have been better to put down a motion that could have bound, but I don't really understand, if you've that much influence, how your group put down a motion that you don't even agree with. But I don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, Sinn Féin have a big mandate and are clearly committed against Brexit, but we have to actually do things about it. And as I say, if the repeal bill is going through Westminster, it just seems absurd that we will be working on amendments, and we're doing that, and we're finding sympathetic MPs to put them forward to protect the Good Friday Agreement. But it parties that are pledged to protect the agreement and this island from Brexit could go and make those amendments themselves.
Claire,
there's no reason not to.
Claire Hannah, thank you very much. John O'Dowd, just before you go, the power sharing talks are hoping to start up again soon. How confident are you that you know, power sharing can be restored. We've seen a series of tweets and comments from senior DUP politicians that suggest things aren't looking great.
Well, I'm realistic about these things. I think it's quite obvious that the restoration of true power sharing in this society is going to be quite difficult. There appears to be a power shift within the DUP towards MPs, particularly MPs who have always had an opposition to power sharing with their National Republican neighbours. So I'm a realist around these things. We will try again, but I'm not overly optimistic.
Some people will ask, John, just in case people haven't are not aware of these tweets, for example, Sammy Wilson tweeting saying, "Time for direct rule. Ian Paisley, fact devolution as we know it is dead." It won't instill a lot of confidence for people that do want to see power sharing restored here.
No, it certainly won't. As I said previously, there appears to be a shift within the DUP towards elements who were never in favour of sharing power with the National Republican neighbours, and that was anchored within the MP grouping. There was always a sense that the distance of the MPs in Westminster was a problem, and that they were resisting elements within the DUP who thought power sharing was the way forward. But we'll see. Once the talks restart in a meaningful way, we will be able to see if there is an opportunity to restore the power sharing institutions.